All I used to do is dream. Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
Danielle Murray has lived with the diagnosis of schizophrenia and post-traumatic stress disorder and is in recovery for 15 years for drug and alcohol addiction. She's gone on to pursue higher education, is a business owner and vocal leader for human rights. In our discussion on Take It From Us, we talk about Danielle's very personal experiences of the New Zealand mental health system, the stigma of a schizophrenia diagnosis and how she has ultimately achieved wellness. Danielle's story is one of discovery, of healing and of hope. You yourself have a long history with going through the mental health system in New Zealand, the ups and the downs, the good, the bad. I imagine there's quite a lot of both. Where would you like to start our conversation?
Maybe just a little bit of a brief history, Kent, so people have a better idea of who I am and what I bring and, yeah, a little bit about me.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. So, like a lot of people, I suppose, I come from a broken home. I grew up in a single-parent home and had a lot of what we in the health professional would call the ACEs. Had quite a lot of significant trauma. And at the age of about 15, discovered drugs and alcohol. And like that heaps, Kent, I thought that was pretty cool. But the longer I used and the more my addiction progressed, the less fun it got. And I found that, I was needing it every day. And, so life spiraled pretty quickly. And, as a result of my drug use, which there was some class A drug use towards the end, probably coupled with the lack of self-care and the lack of sleep, my first trip to the institution was when I was to a mental health institution was when I was, I think it was about 17, 18. So that was my first experience moving into the mental health system. And at the time it was diagnosis of drug-induced psychosis. Yeah.
And how was that for you when they took you to an institution for the first time?
I think for me, the nature of my diagnosis is I don't always know that I'm unwell when I'm unwell. So with it comes the unreal thoughts, which are quite out there. Some of those thoughts can be quite out there, but they're very real for me. So I was a very young person going into an institution, so it was the first time my movement was restricted. It was the first time my rights were taken away from me. And I found myself in this place where I was, not able to do what I needed for myself. But I think the scariest part was being in an open ward with both genders on it. And the nature of the wards is you can be in there with people who are experiencing huge distress. So it was, they put us all together in this open ward and I was so young and so vulnerable. So it was the first time I really had a lot of my rights taken away. And it was traumatic. And I'll talk a little bit more maybe a bit later about how the trauma of those first visits to the inpatient unit basically scared me into being submissive and passive in my later years when I went back as an adult because of the trauma from that.
How long, for that first time, how long were you in that institution?
Usually my hospital visits are usually around about 2 months long. The last time I went in was a lot quicker because I think by this stage I had realised the positive impact that medication has had on my life and I was a lot more willing to take it. The last time I found myself in an inpatient unit, which was only 2 years ago, Kent, so it was very recently. I hadn't been in one for 15 years and I found myself in one again 2 years ago. So by this stage, because of the work I had been in, I had got a voice and I had learned to advocate for myself and I knew my rights. So I think part of the reason I ended up in institutes for so long, the previous admissions, is because I didn't have my voice and I wasn't able to advocate for myself when I was younger and more vulnerable.
And so then you had 15 years of living a relatively, what would you say, a relatively...
full, joyous, happy, you know, I built a life for myself. So to find myself in one of these places again, I like to say I was updating my evidence and my data. Because a lot of the work I've done, having come out of institute, is trying to advocate for a better system for people still moving through them. So I was updating my data, Kent.
Yeah. And what changed 2 years ago?
So part of mine and my husband, I've had a beautiful husband who has done the journey with me, and he's a wonderful man. We've been together for 12 years and we've had a journey of infertility. And one of my GPs, he had seen me, and I had actually worked alongside him in one of the GP clinics, and he had seen me really well. That's the thing, is like one of my favourite party tricks is talking to people for a significant amount of time and then dropping it on them, this diagnosis that I have, and you can see it not fitting up with the idea of someone who's got schizophrenia is in their head. So this doctor had seen me well for a number of years, and he'd said to me, I think you're well enough to come off your meds, Danielle, and it will give you a better chance. We were going through IVF, like I said, it'll give you a better chance of becoming pregnant. So I came off them, you know, with the support of my GP, and within 6 months found myself in an institution again, but only for 3 days this time. Yeah.
So there's a lot happening for you at this time in your life. It sounded like a great idea for the right reasons to come off the medication, but then inadvertently took you down a path where you'd been before. Would that be right?
That's right. And it was, I think I was hopeful. I was hopeful that, you know, it had been so many years since my last admission. I'd done a lot of therapy. I'd done a lot of personal work. I'd sought out a lot of different healing avenues. And even I was hopeful. We were all hopeful, me and my family, that, you know, I may be able to come off them, because some of them have, as a lot of people know, and especially people who are on them, a lot of the medications have side effects that no human should have to live with. And unfortunately, they haven't advanced much since whenever they were released. So the thought of being able to live without those side effects, I was really excited about that. But it's not for me, and I think I've tried enough times. You know, sometimes it takes a while to learn a lesson, and I've tried enough times of it not working off my meds to know. And I've had a full life on them, you know.
Right. So it's healthier for you to be on them.
Yeah, I'm a huge advocate for meds, Kent.
Right. Regardless of the side effects.
Yeah, because I think the only thing I will say is that it's taken 15, 20 years of having a diagnosis for me to find the right one that works. I don't have the sedation anymore. I don't have the weight gain. I don't have the numbing of my feelings. And for many years, I thought to myself, man, why am I feeling, you know, still not 100%? I've done all this therapy. I've done all this good stuff. And it was just, I needed a med change, and it took for me to find the right one to really feel like I had no shackles and I could reach my full potential. So that's only been in the last 2 years. Before that, the medication, the side effects from the medication were really hard. And one thing that I hear a lot in the industry is people calling mental health, you know, people with mental health diagnoses lazy. And I often say I wish anyone without one could take those psych meds and understand the pure determination it takes to even get out of bed when you're that heavily sedated. You know what I mean? So...
It's such an unhelpful word, but anybody to call them lazy.
Yeah, it is. And it's a stigma that's attached to, you know, people with diagnoses. But It couldn't be further from the truth. You know, well, most of us in the mental health system are traumatized too, by the way. Right. So is that aspect.
Yeah, look, I run into this too with my role as a coach, as a health coach. People either describe themselves as being lazy, or others will talk about someone's not making the changes in their life that they need to make because they're lazy, with the implication almost being this person's brought this on themselves and they're doing nothing about it.
It's exactly right. Like, if someone is putting all of their energies into the basics and they've got really big emotional or mental distress that they are trying to navigate, of course the other stuff is all going to be secondary to just trying to get through the day, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and people are overwhelmed and they genuinely don't know where to start. Yeah. And so that can come across to others as being an unwillingness to change. Yeah. But it's certainly not laziness. It might just be confusion, being scared, being a little concerned. Yeah. And I imagine you've gone through all of these emotions, have you, yourself?
Yeah.
Not knowing what to do?
Yeah, not knowing what to do. And it's only just been in the last 2 years where, you know, I feel like, okay, my spiritual life is really full, my emotional life is really content, my mental health is really content. Now that I'm not battling every day with those things, it's like finally I can start to focus on my physical health, because I'm not just trying to survive every day.
Mm. What's been the stigma that you've experienced from that diagnosis of schizophrenia? Because I know you wanted to address this.
Yeah, so it's always really hard. Like, it's really hard when I'm starting new roles. You know, there's that part in a application where it's like, do you have any mental health or diagnoses that could impact your working life? And because mine was well managed for 15 years, it didn't impact my working life. But there's that integrity part of me where I wanted to be open with my employers because of the diagnoses. It's one that a lot of people have biases about, unfortunately. So there's been that. I can't get life insurance because of my diagnoses. So when me and my husband first got married, I really wanted to, you know, create some financial security if either something happened to either one of us. And the bank wouldn't give it to me. They said I was a suicide risk. I tried 5 years later after, you know, being able to prove to them that there had been no medical history, and they still said no. I remember going to a doctor one day and I had some physical health stuff happening, and I'd never seen this doctor before, and she looked at my medical history and saw my diagnosis, and she said to me, well, you know, does this stop happening when you stop thinking about it? And I said to her, it's not psychological, this is actually happening. And I went and got a second opinion, and it turned out I had chronic kidney disease. That doctor took it seriously. And so, you know, I think one thing I'm really grateful for is that I think the biggest game changer in my life was coming across a woman called Kailash Arya, and she's well known in Auckland in the peer support world. And because I was the first one diagnosed in my family with something like this, I felt really alone, and I was quite isolated. And I didn't have a lot of people to talk about my experience with, but she was the first woman, she was a peer support specialist, that saw something in me and shared her story, and I could relate. And it was the first time I let go of some of the shame and some of the shame and guilt around this diagnosis that I had been given. And that really was the start. I got into employment after that, and that was another huge factor to my well-being, was finding meaningful employment and feeling like I had purpose. And it's sort of just been upwards from there, apart from the little blips, because it's never a straight journey, is it?
It's never smooth sailing for anybody. Tell us about the purpose that you found in your employment over the last few years.
So like, because of my childhood, I was a high school dropout and didn't place a lot of value on education. But I think one of the biggest things I've found, there's a couple of women in my journey, actually quite a significant, I've just recently given them all a shout out on my LinkedIn page, but there were a couple of women in the mental health sector, in the social service sector, that really grew me, and they believed in me, and they put a lot of time and effort, and they loved me. Really, they loved me until I could love myself again. And they were huge examples of what type of leader I wanted to be. Also working in a peer support environment where you're surrounded by people with diagnoses, there was something really freeing about that, learning to laugh at yourself and laughing at your quirks and not taking yourself so seriously. And of course, being able to find people that you can relate with in terms of the harm done in our system has been really empowering as well, you know. Just knowing I'm not alone, that connection, Ken, you know.
Right, so you've been able to find your tribe.
I've found my tribe.
Yeah.
Yeah, my vibrational tribe, yeah.
What about the system needs to change the most? Because you mentioned not a lot, you didn't find a lot had moved on in that 15-year period that you'd been on your own.
I think the difference with the, so there's quite a few things, definitely restrictive practice, like the art of restraining and seclusion. From my experience and the stories I've heard, most of us are only responding or reacting in a way where we need to be secluded or restrained because of injustices done to us within the institution. The way that they're set up, so for example, when I was 17 and I went in, they had no right to do this, but they stopped me from having visitors. So, you know, when you're in a place like that and that's your lifeline, seeing your family or, I had a response to that, and the way they handled that was to have six people restrain me and put me in a room with nothing in it, in a mattress on the ground. I was 17. So a lot of the times where people are using their voice and they're reacting, it's because of the injustices done in there. And I suppose that needs to be looked at. And there's a lot of work being done in those spaces. There's a lot of people, I mean, they're repealing the Mental Health Act, they're rewriting a lot of policy. So there's people in all parts of the sector. And what's really cool is we've got leaders who aren't peers that we've got really good allies in, and they're spearheading change too. So I'm really hopeful. I'm really hopeful at a lot of the work being done.
Yeah. And what message for those that are going through what you've been through or have a similar story to yours and they're in the system, and perhaps they feel trapped, maybe they feel lost, what message would you like to give to them today?
I think that you're more than your diagnosis. The way the language and the medical model is set up is that it's really disempowering, and it can leave you feeling disenfranchised. And I think, you know, people are more than their diagnoses. And, you know, I've gone, my diagnosis is schizophrenia, PTSD, and I've gone on, you know, my role I hold now has a lot of responsibility. I'm the Director of Operations and Clinical Services. I'm a business owner. I have whānau boys that I, in some way, had a mother sort of relationship to. And so I suppose I'm the evidence that, you know, we can have a full, beautiful, meaningful life despite our diagnosis, although it may feel sometimes that the system and, you know, the language used tells us that we are a diagnosis, but we're not. We're much more than that.
When were you diagnosed with post-traumatic So this disorder.
That's an interesting part to the story too, because they overlap a lot and it was missed in the system for many years. So once I got treatment for that, would have been 4 years ago I was diagnosed with that. So that was missed, you know, that was missed. So that's where the therapy and the psychology. And part of my journey too, Kent, has been that I've been really creative in my avenues of healing. I mean, the medical model's only been around for how many years? And then you've got all these other beautiful, they call them alternative methods of healing that aren't really alternative. A lot of them are ancient methods of healing that are, you know, just as effective, if not more. And so I've found myself in some really bizarre, but I've always been really willing to seek other avenues of healing. So it's a really complex, complex picture and how I've got to, but yeah, just I've been willing to try anything really to feel peace and joy.
What's worked for you?
A lot of, I'm doing quotation marks for the listeners that can't see me. A lot of the schizophrenic diagnoses, like the quotation marks, delusions, hearing voices, the most pivotal part to me understanding what was going on for me was getting back in touch with my te ao Māori side, my wairuatanga, and actually understanding, oh, okay, I am hearing things, but it's actually something spiritual going on. And okay, some of these things that are happening, I can understand it from a te ao Māori space. And I've had mentors along the way who have helped me to understand that and grow that and develop that. And it's given me a completely different frame of reference where the medical system would say there's something wrong with me and te ao Māori says there's something very right with me. So it's a different way of looking at it and, you know, understanding energy and how I'm sensitive to energy and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And we talk about the medical model and healing and really that for them is medicine. But you're talking about almost instinctive healing where yeah. You're tapping into things that inherently, instinctively, yeah. You know will help you.
Yes, yes, yes. So I found myself in the back of gypsy vans getting past life readings and, you know, doing neuro-linguistic therapy where you look at your generational trauma, intergenerational trauma that's been passed down. And there's so much out there outside, you know, psychology and the meds, also getting clean and sober. So I'm 15 years clean and sober this year through the help of a 12-step program. So that's been huge as well in terms of me being well. And I think one thing I'm really privileged around is that, you know, the spirituality has given me a faith in a power higher than myself that I can draw strength on too. So if there was one other thing I would say to people who feel like they're alone is that there is a higher power, whatever you choose, you know, a name for that, and there's many of them out there, is, you know, you're never alone and you're loved by something greater than yourself, whether that's God, whether that's Buddha, whether that's, you know, Tangaroa, Rangi, is
yeah, huge, huge, powerful component of that Te Whare Tapu Whā health model. It's the same in our Pacific cultures as well. Not a big thing because I think in the West we think, oh, it must be religion. And for those people that aren't religious, they may not think to be spiritual or to feel those things that maybe that you're talking about. It's maybe something that we're missing, eh?
It's a huge thing that's missing because, I mean, how do you say it? Human beings by nature, I think it's the way we've been indoctrinated and the way we've evolved is that we place things on the 3D, on the material. And human beings, we are all spiritual beings at the core. And so getting back in touch with that, it's just been the most beautiful journey. Yeah.
And we're always growing. I was listening to a fascinating conversation recently with someone who's, I don't know if they were a molecular biologist or someone that works, very, very smart scientific woman, and she was actually talking about the fact that as human beings, we're constantly moving, we're constantly evolving, we're constantly changing, we're constantly growing. We are always, like our entire life is just change. Day to day, we're always just in that sort of growth sort of framework. And I guess I hadn't really thought of it like that. And I think for most people, we think, oh, we grow up, our brains grow to a certain size. Physically, we finish growing in our late teens or whatever it might be. This is it. I'm complete. I'm whole. This is me for the rest of my life. When in actual fact, we're constantly going through a process. And I think that was the word that she talked about. Human beings ourselves, we are a process. And I thought, wow, that's such a fascinating way to look at things, just to frame it that way.
It's true, because if you think about it, we are having new experiences every day. An experience is a teacher. We meet new people every day, and with every person, there's a manifestation of different lessons in there. So I absolutely agree with that, Kent. Yeah.
When you get diagnosed, do you think, oh, wow, this all makes sense now? Yeah, that's right. Or do you need to stop and think, and did you push back at all and wonder how long it was that you had that particular diagnosis?
Oh, you know what? My diagnosis has changed at least 4 times. You know, they thought it was bipolar. It was drug-induced psychosis, then it was bipolar, then it was bipolar schizoaffective, then schizophrenia, then bipolar, then back to schizophrenia. So, you know, I don't think we can package humans up in this little box so often. We're far more complex. But I tell you what did help was getting the diagnosis of PTSD, because once I read up on that, it gave me a framework to the distress I was feeling. And it's also helped in terms of me seeking the treatment I needed to seek as well. So that it's good in that respect, but I think we can't often package humans into the nice little boxes the doctors want us to be in.
I imagine the PTSD gave you a reference point to help explain maybe when or how these changes have come about.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a few interesting things around my PTSD that it's really interesting how it creeps into all parts of your life. And once you start getting treatment for it, how it's the same thing. Sometimes you don't know until you know. You know what I mean?
Mm. So who helps and supports you now?
So hubby's a huge support. You know, I'm really fortunate in the way that I've got, you know, my mum's an amazing, amazing source of strength. She made changes, and she sought a different life for herself when we were a lot younger. So I'll always be grateful for her for, I suppose, being brave and courageous and doing something different and breaking the intergenerational cycle that was in our family for addiction. Like I say, my work colleagues, you know, they're much more than just work colleagues to me. They've become family. So I'm really grateful. I've got good people around me, Kent. Got good people around me.
Yeah, we all need good people. And there's something horrible about isolation. And you're telling the story about being thrown into a room against your own wishes just goes against everything we know about what is good for a person, and being socially isolated and willfully cut off when it's not our choice is one of the most damaging, hurtful things you can put on someone.
Yeah.
What are some of your interests these days? What are some of the hobbies that you do to help with your mental well-being?
I don't know if it's a part of my diagnoses, but I like to try new things. I've recently, and you know, not with the thought to ever have anybody hear it, but I've started making music recently, and it's more just therapeutic, like, you know, being able to be creative and I have a dog. My dog is my world. She's a chow chow. She was the only big decision I ever made without my husband. But she was one of the best decisions I made. And we live up in the far north, so we get the most beautiful weather. So we spend a lot of time at the beach and fishing, swimming. Water has been a huge healer for me, in terms of spiritual practices and cleansing. If I'm starting a new chapter in my life or if I'm feeling particularly heavy, I go down to my whenua and cleanse in our awa. Karakia has been huge for me, releasing, learning how to release, you know, the day in terms of energetically. So I think the biggest part of my life is probably my spirituality and practicing meditation, prayer, things like that. Those are all practices I've had to implement into my life to keep me well. Because for me, I see everything in energy and I'm sensitive to energy. So I need really stringent spiritual hygiene practices. Yeah.
And you're one there with nature. You talk about swimming and being in the water. And gee, the far north of New Zealand would be one of the most amazing places on the planet as far as our connection to the land and the sea would be concerned.
Yeah. I took it a step further and took surf lessons 2 years.
Oh, did you?
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the summer because I'm too much of a wuss to surf in the winter.
Looking forward to rip again. Well, it's been lovely for you to share your story, Danielle, and to give those people who are maybe experiencing some really tough times some hope and a sense of optimism. What do you want for yourself?
You know what? I because of my belief in, you know, we're exactly where we're meant to be, exactly where we're meant to be in this time and space, I sort of just follow my nose, Kent. I do the next right thing. I try and uphold my integrity and my honesty, and do the right thing. And things, my external world is reflecting my internal world. And I think that's a good sign that you're in a good place. I think I'll just, like you said, we're here to evolve and to progress. And I'll just keep, you know, I think I've got a grip on everything, and then I'm showing things I need to work on personally. So I think my learning will never stop. You know, as far as I know, there's only saints and, you know, Jesus that were perfect. So I think it's going to be a lifelong journey of continuing to develop and grow and heal.
We are certainly not perfect. What are your hopes for the rest of us?
For the rest of us?
Yeah.
I would hope people get curious about what's happening in their mind and in their hearts and in their spirit. And with that curiosity, there comes a willingness to learn and then to take action towards being happy, joyous and free. Because anyone that's not sitting in that space of happy, joyous and freedom doesn't have to be like that. And but we do need to take some level of personal responsibility for our healing. Yeah,
I know what you mean. I talk about we need to be engaged in our own health and well-being. We've got one precious life. We get one crack at it each. And if we don't have the time or we're not prepared to look after ourselves, something's gone wrong. And I see this everywhere I go, and everyone, well, not everyone, that would be ridiculous, but in so many areas now, self-care has fallen to the bottom because people are just too busy to look after themselves. And I'm thinking, man, don't wait until you're 48 or don't wait until you're 60 to get engaged. You need to be engaged and to take care. And I know people think about personal responsibility, and I think that is partly true, but we all know if we're engaged in our own health, if we value it, if we really value it, and know in health and others, we're going a massive long way to feeling better about life and having that ease of being that you're talking about.
Well, I like to say that pain is a great motivator. We don't often take action unless we're in some type of pain. So, you know, pain can be quite motivating. It's been so cool talking to you, Kent. You're a great host. Thank you so much.
Appreciate your time, Danielle. We wish you nothing but the best.
Awesome. Thank you, Kent.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy, and I'm your host, Kent Johns. Please get in touch with us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Take It From Us. My story, your story, our story.
A whole world of radio on planetaudio.org.nz.
Tune into Ireland Calling with Oliver Lee on Planet FM 104.6 every Wednesday night between 10 and 11pm. On the show, you will hear news from Irish correspondents, the latest Irish music, studio guests and news of events happening in the Auckland area, and the chance to win great prizes. All this and much more on Ireland Calling on Planet FM 104.6 every Wednesday night between 10 and 11pm.
You can hear our program of the Ageless Wisdom Teachings brought to you by the Auckland Transmission Group on Friday mornings at 9:15. We introduce the world teacher Maitreya and topics chosen from Share International magazine. Keep yourself up to date with the emergence and how it's working out in the modern world. Friday morning at 9:15 on Planet FM 104.6.
Wild beaches,
the number of restaurants.
I love cycling around the waterfront.
Seeing the sea and knowing that it's full of dolphins and whales.
I go tramping every weekend.
Loving Auckland.
There's always something interesting, something new to find.
The harbour is absolutely amazing.
Something's always happening.
Our diversity.
The amazing views.
And the libraries.
Good weather, good people.
And it has great coffee.
I find it really hard to think of what's missing in Auckland.
planetaudio.org.nz.
Take It From Us brings you real stories from real people, sharing their experiences of mental distress and journeys to recovery. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30pm right here on 104.6 Planet FM, or catch the latest episodes at planetaudio.org.nz/takeitfromus. It's a half hour of commercial-free music coming up next now here on Planet FM, taking us through to Samlyn Khmer with news, music and updates from Cambodia on air at 10 past 2.
Listen to it pour, and with every drop of rain, you know I love you more. Let it rain all night long, let my love for you grow strong. As long as we're together, who cares about weather? Listen to the falling rain, listen to it fall. Drop of rain, I can hear you call.